way, something was lost once media stopped putting the phrase "war on terror" in rhetorical quotation marks. We lost a degree of critical distance on whether an abstraction could be an official enemy and battlefield practices and rationales appropriated to a fight that might happen anywhere against enemies unheard of until the event. As a framework for understanding the violence the U.S. is engaged in around the world, war on terror seems patently flawed, especially when it means war only on something called Islamic extremist terror, a term that itself confuses more than it explains. We are joined now to discuss this by Arun Kundyani. He teaches at NYU and is the author of, most recently, The Muslims Are Coming, Islamophobia, Extremism, and the Domestic War on Terror. Welcome to Counterspin, Arun Kundyani.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a truism that for many media and politicians, a killer who is Muslim is moved to kill by Islam, while one who says black people have to die is a unique individual for whom that belief is part of a complex kaleidoscope of meanings. The reduction of Islam to violence and then the attendant policy ideas are in full bloom, if you will, on the right now, and it's really quite distressing to see. But if we could skip ahead to what might be called the liberal alternative to that vision, to that approach, for example, you've suggested that that vision is problematic in its own way. How so?
Yes, I think we need to pay more attention to the way that we argue with conservatives in this area. So in the last week, for example, we've seen a lot of liberals reject Donald Trump's ban on Muslims on the grounds that to ban Muslims would inflame opinion against us in the Middle East and therefore lead to more terrorism. And so what you're seeing, rather than a kind of principled argument against Trump's racism, what you're seeing instead is a kind of pragmatic argument that says, if we just say the wrong thing, then we're going to find that we will generate more terrorism again, which of course feeds this kind of underlying assumption that Muslims are these crazy people who are on the verge of becoming terrorists the whole time. You know, we have a kind of way of thinking, I think, coming from Democrat Party liberals and prominent voices in the kind of liberal commentariat that kind of takes this view where you kind of distinguish between the idea of moderate Muslims and the idea of extremist Muslims. And you say there is a problem of extremist Muslims, and we need to understand that is not all Muslims. It's a certain subsection that we have a problem with. And you know, this is the kind of liberal alternative to the conservative idea that, you know, the problem is just Islam is violent. The problem is that you end up still assuming that there's just something about this population that leads to terrorism. And you ignore the fact that terrorism is a political problem. It's not a religious problem. Anyone who pays attention to what has been happening in the Middle East for decades and looks at the whole history here will understand that it's, you know, what we're dealing with is a product of geopolitics. Religious ideology plays a role, but its role is one of giving people a vocabulary for expressing political issues. And it's not the underlying driver. It's not the root cause, which is what both liberals and conservatives tend to assume here.
You've described radicalization as kind of the latest phase of Islamophobia. You know, it in shows like the television program Homeland, for example, it's seen as an advance because it locates terrorism on a psychological level, but it still presents Islam as itself kind of inherently radicalizing, and the question is just whether these people will succumb to it or not, you know. And one of the key points of that, I think, that is so important to keep in mind is that where that vision leads us is to a place where, you know, not all Muslims are bad, yes, of course, but if someone is Muslim and also critical of U.S. policies, then that is seen as adding up to a precursor to terrorism. And that, of course, is a very corrosive idea for politics, for political expression.
Yes, precisely. And so, you know, we did not use this word radicalized or radicalization 20 years ago when we wanted to talk about terrorism. It's now become a part of our everyday vocabulary. You hear it in the media all the time. How has that happened? Well, it's because terrorism experts, so-called, have been regularly saying that radicalization is the key concept that we need to understand terrorism. What does this concept of radicalization mean? It means a process by which someone goes from being someone who's not a terrorist to being someone who is a terrorist. You just use the language here that captures that, the idea that someone's a precursor to being a terrorist. In other words, they're not a terrorist, but something about them makes us think that they will be at some point in the future. So at the heart of this idea of radicalization, if we're going to use this vocabulary, there is a claim to be able to predict who can be a terrorist, right? No social scientific study has ever been able to achieve that predictive power. And yet the government officials and the media, commentators, we all use this language that assumes that somehow you can tell from someone's non-violent, law-abiding behavior that they're on a pathway to becoming a terrorist. And obviously those indicators that we assume tell us someone's on that pathway are all to do with religious behaviors in some way. So, you know, we have seen from the New York Police Department reports come out that say someone growing a beard, that's an indicator of radicalization. Someone changing the clothing they wear to be what they call traditional Islamic clothing is an indicator of radicalization. So no evidence supports this idea, but this has become part of our way of thinking about terrorism now. We're trying to, every Muslim in America, the question that is hovering over them is, oh, is there something about you that is displaying the signs of radicalization, that you're about to become a terrorist? That's what we look for now in these cases like in San Bernardino. What were the indicators of radicalization? The truth is, these things are, at the level of an individual, completely unpredictable. And there is no radicalization model that can explain how someone comes to believe that it's okay to kill their fellow citizens.
We talk a little bit, at least, about how the tools of the so-called war on terror are then turned on domestic social movements. We talk about it moving that way. We talk less about how the suppression of social movements itself leads to the rise of terrorist groups and of violent groups. And you have discussed that as being connected to the need to, if I can use your words, the need to defend the spaces of radical politics and the right to dream of another world. It does have something to do with having spaces for us to talk and to share political ideas. That's a critical kind of anti-violence tool, is it not?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think we desperately need to understand that the root cause of political violence in any form is political, right? It's not about fanaticism. It's not about religion. It's about politics. And it's about people who feel that the regular day-to-day political processes have absolutely no chance of bringing about any redress for the injustices that they see in the world. So what we need is more radicalization, in fact, in the genuine sense of the word, in the sense of people being able to participate in movements that offer a genuine chance of achieving social progress, a vision of what that would look like. We've been starved of visions of change that are compelling for something like 2 decades now. And that is really the context in which these in Europe, for example, in which ISIS can have some kind of attraction for a tiny number of people because they're operating in a vacuum. No one else is offering, no one else is speaking the language of utopianism that they speak. Politics has been gentrified and made very bland, particularly for young people in communities of color in Europe. So that's, I think, ultimately where the alternatives arise.
We've been speaking with Arun Kunani. His most recent book is The Muslims Are Coming, Islamophobia, Extremism, and the Domestic War on Terror. It's out now from Verso. Arun Kunani, thank you very much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you for having me.